And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. This is the Week 9 Rewind. I am Chip Patterson, joined as always for the Rewind by Mr. Tom Fornelli over there in Chicago. Tom, we finally, after 2 weeks of just a lot of upsets, this was a, again, I don't like to brand them, but it certainly was a Saturday where we saw a lot of very convincing results. Ones that either reaffirmed our thoughts on certain teams for the good or for the worse, and then there's a few exceptions in there, like the SEC East. But for the most part, among the top 25, it was sort of a day to sort things out, wouldn't you say?
Now let's brand it. Let's call it the Confirmation Saturday.
Confirmation, separation, shake-up Saturday.
Alliteration Saturday.
Yeah. Thank goodness that college football plays on Saturday. Saturday just offers so many opportunities for alliteration.
If the letter S is just so versatile.
So versatile. I mean, it would be the it would be your H-back that could be a fullback, a tight end, or split out to wide as a slot receiver if it was a football player.
It really is. It is the what's his name from the NFL? The ultra back, Raymond Harris. The S is the ultra back of the alphabet.
That's exactly it. And I wanted to begin right there at the top of the AP poll, the BCS standings. I mean, we're talking about the four teams that have – actually, you know what? We're going to make it five. The five teams that I would say right now are national title contenders. I'm talking, of course, about the Alabama Crimson Tide, Oregon, Florida State, Ohio State, and Baylor. Now, the top four of those teams actually combined on this past Saturday to win 199-55. Those scores quickly. Alabama over Tennessee, 45-10. Florida State over NC State, 49-17. Oregon over UCLA, 42-14. Ohio State, 63. Penn State, 14. Our good friend Matt Hinton pointed out the worst beatdown for Penn State in that rivalry since the McKinley administration. And Baylor goes 59-14 on the road at Kansas. So we're going to start here. And I gave you a little bit of a heads up because I think that while these discussions in a way are a little bit pointless because we'll just see everything play itself out on the field, this is college football and this is a college football podcast. So at least it's fun for the purpose of discussion. Again, five teams, Alabama, Oregon, Florida State, Ohio State, Baylor. And I want to hear from you, Tom, of those, all those results on Saturday, what was the most impressive win? Then we'll move to the most significant win, which, you know, might be, you know, what it means for them or what you saw, whether it was important for the team. And then we'll finish with just sort of where those five teams line up in a ranking in your eyes. So let's start with most impressive win. What really stood out to you from those five teams on Saturday?
For me, it was pretty simple. The most impressive win to me was Oregon, because even though the Ducks were kind of, you know, slow in the first half of that game, they out of the five teams, those five teams, Oregon played the toughest competition in UCLA and pulled away in the second half to beat them by 28 points. So for me, that's the most impressive win, because at this point, looking at the way that things have broken down in the Pac-12 the last few weeks, how are we really – who's there that we could think could really beat Oregon at this point?
I mean, it was UCLA and Stanford are really sort of the last two hurdles in my opinion.
Yeah, and they took care of UCLA by 28 points. So, you know, it's not looking good for the rest of the Pac-12 at this point.
Yeah.
As for my most significant – I would go with Ohio State simply because that was the game we've been looking for from Ohio State all season long and hell for most of the last 2 years, because it's been the one knock on Ohio State. Yes, they've been winning games, but they've been playing down to competition that really, you know, in the Big Ten has not been absolutely stellar. They've been stuck in a lot of close games, hanging around for three quarters before finally putting things together in the fourth. But last night on Saturday, Ohio State finally put together a full 60 minutes, completely dominated Penn State in that game, put up 63 points. And another factoid about Penn State, it's the third straight week that the Nittany Lions have given up 40 points or more. According to the Big Ten Network's Dave Revson, the last time Penn State did that, 1899.
No question about Ohio State. I agree with you. This is what we've talked about it on this podcast. We were, you know, almost getting bored with the keep it close until it's time to let Braxton Miller and Carlos Hyde kind of put the game away. This game put away early. It is 42-7 by halftime, 56-7 by the end of the third quarter. And really, Allen Robinson gets a long touchdown in cleanup time to keep it from being 63-7 as the final score. I agree with you. That was one thing that I think, you know, makes Ohio State's like, okay, Ohio State, you know, that now it just sort of looks down the road. It's a very manageable schedule, but do you see anything potentially to slip up the Buckeyes before Michigan?
No, yeah, really. Okay. I mean, no, when you look at their schedule and you just look at the Big Ten as a whole, I mean, and how confident are we even that Michigan can do it? The only reason we're even considering it a possibility is because the game's in Ann Arbor. But if you look at Ohio State's schedule, there's, you know, they still haven't even played Illinois yet. They haven't played Purdue yet. Those are the two worst teams in the conference, and those are their next two games. They get an Indiana team that, you know what? Maybe. Indiana's a weird team. Maybe something happens there. But no, I think Ohio State's going to be favored by double digits in pretty much every game until Michigan.
And, you know, and like we said before we began this little game, it's if you keep winning, you know, history says you'll end up getting to where you want to be. So that if they just take care of business, things might not be all that poor. What, in your opinion, let's go, what is your ranking of those five teams right now?
Number one, I've got Bama with a slight, tiny little bitty edge over Oregon. Number three, I've got Florida State. Number four, Baylor. And then number five, Ohio State.
Florida State 35-0 by the end of the first quarter, and then the gas is let up just a little bit, 49-17. Jameis Winston's day was done after the first series of the third quarter. This was just a utter domination with Bobby Bowden in the house. He plants the spear, tons of former players there, and it was a very, very convincing win for me. I didn't think it stood out necessarily among those five. So I agree that it does not make most impressive from what I posed to you. But compared to the way that Miami struggled and needed two fourth quarter touchdowns to take care of Wake Forest at home, it was like the juxtaposition, and we'll get to this in a little bit, but as we're looking towards Miami, I was just like, Florida State just might be on another level than the rest of the ACC.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, you know, it's hard to know every week in college football what's going to happen, but I'd be very surprised if Florida State just doesn't beat Miami down pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, now, we lost an undefeated team, a top five team, an SEC title contender takes a loss as South Carolina puts in Connor Shaw. They overcome a 17-0 fourth quarter deficit. They force overtime. They get the win in overtime at Missouri. Then, whoa, SEC East totally shaken up. South Carolina back in a position where it looks like they could be able to get to Atlanta. Missouri has a very tough road if they want to maintain their control atop of the SEC East. They are not totally out of the BCS title picture, but now they join a very competitive conversation of all the one-loss teams. And my notes for this game, obviously this was written before the end of it, but in the fourth quarter, I said, you know, offense struggled a little bit. Missouri's defense stepped up and won the game. Clearly that didn't happen down the stretch.
No.
But what was your sort of takeaway, first of all, from the Missouri side? And, you know, what kind of chance do you give them to be able to avoid letting this loss linger? Because if you look down the rest of their schedule, Tennessee coming to Columbia, you know, not the same as playing Tennessee and Neyland right now. Kentucky should be all right. But then you finish with Ole Miss and Texas A&M, two toss-up games, in my opinion, regardless of whether James Franklin is back or not. You know, what do you make of Mizzou after watching them collapse like that against South Carolina?
First of all, what an absolutely horrible way to lose.
Yeah.
I mean, the doink is – doinks are never good, you know, but to lose a game on a doink like that is just terrible. And
did you go look at Baggett's Twitter account?
Oh, yeah. I was retweeting a bunch of, let's say, not-so-classy Mizzou fans tweeting towards Beckett last night saying some wonderful things in the vein of kill yourself and I hope you die. Because, you know, he missed a kick. But he's the easy goat, but it's not exactly, I mean, his fault. First of all, whoever the holder was has obviously never seen Ace Ventura Pet Detective because laces were not out. Laces were in. And then, you know, it's not like the South Carolina defense didn't blow a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter. So it's like Bagot, I think, is the easy target from stupid, angry Missouri fans, but I don't think it's really his fault.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as far as Mizzou's season goes from here on out, it's tough to see them getting through all four of those games without a loss, which is why I think this game was so important for them to win and blowing it. It could haunt them because South Carolina, you know, they've pretty much run through the toughest part of their schedule. They still have Florida, but I don't think anybody's really concerned about Florida. But then again, the SEC East this year, who knows? But Missouri really can't afford to lose again. It's hard to see them going on the road against Ole Miss and then playing at home against Texas A&M in back-to-back weeks. It's hard to see them getting through those two games without tripping up at least once.
Yeah, and when Missouri does go into those final 2 weeks, South Carolina's SEC schedule is done. They get Mississippi State, they get Florida, but their last two opponents are against Coastal Carolina and Clemson. So Missouri will go into those very, very difficult games knowing exactly what they need to do in order to either win or clinch the SEC East. It's going to be very, very fun to watch down the stretch.
Yeah, that's the good thing of the chaos of the SEC East is it's certainly making things a lot more interesting as Alabama pretty much, you know, scorches the earth on the other side of the conference.
Yeah. I don't even think I included a lot of details in this rundown. Anything? I mean, Auburn took care of business. Let's see. Johnny Manziel looked very, very healthy as Texas A&M dispatched with Vanderbilt. LSU let Furman hang around for a little while. Nick Marshall got hurt, left the game, but reports coming through on Sunday that he should be fine, not expected to miss any time. Auburn up in the top 10 of the AP poll. Is he buying that?
That's a quick rise. I mean, I thought they were underrated 2 weeks ago and they were keeping them down at 24th. And then in the last 2 weeks, they've jumped up to 8th. And I feel it's a good team. But if it wasn't an SEC team, I don't think it would be ranked 8th right now, no.
Yeah. Well, there is the Texas A&M win. So if you're going to keep Texas A&M,
They've got the good win. It's just all of a sudden, how did that team go from 24th to 8th so quickly if it's not in the SEC? That's my only.
That's a very valid point. Duke Blue Devils, right here in my backyard, are bowling for back-to-back years for the first time since 2000. No, for the first time in program history. Excuse me. Last year, they get the sixth win against North Carolina mid-season. This year, good golly, go on the road into Blacksburg and get out of there with a 13-10 win. You get four interceptions from Anthony Boone, but you get four interceptions from Logan Thomas. Duke becomes the first team in the 2013 season to win a game without a single third down conversion.
All right. Let's put this out there because, you know, Bill Snyder's getting close to retirement. Is David Cutcliffe new Bill Snyder?
Yes. I believe it, man. He's a wizard.
Because, like, literally, he's taken Duke to consecutive bowl games. Duke.
Yeah.
And that he just took Duke on the road to beat a ranked Virginia Tech team with, like, 130 yards of offense. You said no third down conversion. It's magic. He has the Bill Snyder magic. Cutcliffe is the new Bill Snyder.
I'm cool with it.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, Cutcliffe is definitely the new Bill Snyder. And you read some of these quotes coming out of Virginia Tech's locker room. And there is no hiding what the issue is. Running back Jason Coleman is telling reporters, he said, "We let the defense down. If we played as well as the defense played, we might be one of the best teams in the country. But we are the ones letting it down." Where do you stand on Virginia Tech? They fall from the polls, but they were up there at number 14. Are you still considering them? I'm not ready to write them off in the ACC because I'm not sold on Miami yet either.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're a member of Virginia Tech's defense, how are you not filling a pillowcase with bars of soap right now and wailing on your offensive teammates?
It is very, very disappointing. And Logan Thomas's four interceptions, he took complete credit for two of them. The other two came
on... Well, that's nice.
The other two came on tipped passes. I always, you know... quarterbacks get with so much focus on the quarterbacks, quarterbacks do get sort of taken over the coals over the interception numbers. And sometimes if there's tipped passes, which two of them were, but credit to Kelby Brown, and I forgot who the other Duke linebacker was who picked it off.
But my greater point was, you know, Logan Thomas's entire career. It's nice to know that he's taking credit for two of the interceptions. But no, it's you know, Virginia Tech, because it's the ACC, and from what we've seen, you know, they could easily still end up winning the division. They could still be playing for the ACC title. You know, Miami's good, but I don't think it's as great as its ranking. I think Georgia Tech will just end up winning that division just because it's the ACC. I do agree. I don't think Virginia Tech should have fallen out of the rankings completely, but it's hard to argue against people who did so because that offense was so putrid. But, yeah, they'll probably still end up playing in the ACC title game.
I mean, they still have one of the best defenses and like one of the 5 to 10 best defenses in the country. So you're at least going to have a shot. It's just you can't expect something like that. Now, you know, like you just said, Miami, the bubble, it sounds like we both expect this party to come to an end because for three straight ACC games, the Hurricanes have trailed. It was against Georgia Tech, North Carolina, and now Wake Forest. Again, we're not talking about world beaters here with those three teams, and Miami has fallen behind early in each one of these games. In the last two games, they needed two fourth quarter touchdowns just to be able to escape with the win. Meanwhile, last three ACC games for Florida State have been beatdowns. So
they've been impressive enough, yes.
But I will say this: I expect that Miami's best game of the season will probably come against Florida State, right? Don't you? Or do you think that it's just going to be a complete beatdown?
I think Miami's best game of the season can happen against Florida State, and Florida State will still win by 35.
You're just that confident in Florida State?
No, I know I'm not. I'm never confident in anything in the ACC. Let's get that. But I just, from what we've seen of Miami, it hasn't played well. True, but have you seen anything that could convince you that Miami, even if it plays its best game, is going to hang with Florida State?
Philip Dorsett being out, a couple other injuries at the skill position, the fact that Duke Johnson, you know, I can't tell if he's hurt or if he's running 30 times for 168 yards. It could be either one. We'll see. I think it just seems very typical that with all of the players on both of those rosters that were high school teammates, with everything that's sort of surging, with all the hype, with game day, I think that Miami will not come out sleepy like they did against North Carolina and against Wake Forest.
I think Miami gets killed by Florida State and then comes out a week later and beats Virginia Tech 3-2.
That'd be very ACC. All right.
Yes.
Let's head out west. We already talked about Oregon, and quickly, well, I guess from that Oregon win, what was there anything specific that you saw that was either new or jumped out at you to make you, again, putting Oregon right there just a clip below Alabama in your sort of personal opinion?
No, I mean, I didn't learn anything new. They're the best team in the Pac-12. I think what I learned more was about the rest of the Pac-12 than Oregon. They're, if you compare resumes, I mean, at this point, with Alabama and Oregon, if you put one in front of the other, I don't really think anybody has a solid argument they can make against you as to be wrong.
You know what? I watch a game and I step away and I'm like, man, I think Oregon's defense just looks really, really good. And
yeah, it's very good, but it doesn't get any credit because everybody's too busy staring at the offense.
UCLA's only points came off a turnover and a turnover on downs, right? Or a blocked punt and a turnover on downs.
Two short fields, yes.
Yeah. I mean, that is one of the greatest compliments you can have as far as analyzing a defensive unit. And I don't know how other people, you know, put their polls out. But, you know, in college football, I kind of like, you know what? You know, they have a defense that can do it all. I mean, it doesn't need a specific type of offense to go against, and it should be able to find success. And that was just really impressive because Brett Hundley got off to a pretty decent start, but I don't know, man. Oregon's D is good.
Yeah, Oregon's D's very good, and then UCLA came into this game dealing with a bunch of injuries on offense, which didn't help their case very much. But it's like Oregon is the best team in the Pac-12, and that's really all it comes down to at this point.
Stanford getting things right back to a very Stanford. It was just pretty much a continuation of the UCLA game, just a slow grind of just wearing out Oregon State. They did a very good job of being able to limit some of the Sean Mannion, Brandon Cooks, but they were not able to pull away. It was just a very Stanford win. I mean, they get 7 sacks, I think. They're even dealing with injury issues on the defensive line. What's your thought on this game?
It wasn't, aside from Stanford's defense, it really wasn't that impressive of a game on anybody's part. But I feel like right now on offense, Stanford is literally just Ty Gaffney, and that's it. He had another big game, but the rest of that offense, Kevin Hogan and them, aren't doing anything. And Oregon State made it look a lot closer towards the end than the game really was for the entire 60 minutes. But the one thing that I actually took away from this game, just considering how poorly that Stanford has played on offense, if you look at Oregon's schedule right now for the rest of the year, with the Stanford and Oregon State games, I would say Oregon State has a better chance of knocking off Oregon at this point than Stanford does, simply because I don't trust Stanford's offense to do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, for you know, as great as ball control can be, I mean, they're just not pulling away from anybody, and Oregon can score in a hurry.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, it's not like Oregon's defense is a pushover. So if Ty Gaffney is the only thing Stanford has going on offense, Oregon will figure out a way to stop that and force Kevin Hogan to beat him. And the way Kevin Hogan has played this year, I have no confidence that he can do it.
This is my big concern for Stanford. Fourth quarter drives are 3 and out, 2 and fumble, 3 and out. They were watching their lead slowly disappear. They kicked the field. I mean, really, it was only after the field goal, which cut it to 20-12, were they able to finally like lock the game away. But man, just a first down, just one first down in the fourth quarter would have been enough to ease some of my worries about the offense. But when you need to be able to kill clock, get first downs, it's just did not really impress me that Stanford wasn't able to do it.
No, it's this offense just hasn't been there. It hasn't been there for about a month now either.
The Southern Cal Trojans are down at one point in Saturday's game. They were down to less than 50 scholarship players. But USC's defense stands strong, and they beat Utah 19-3. Travis Wilson struggled, suffered a sprained finger. Utah, you know, a lot of hope. They've been really, really competitive in some losses. They got the win over Stanford, but we're talking about a team that's 1-4 in Pac-12, 4-4, now dealing with issues at the quarterback position. I was very high on this Utah team. Now I'm starting to panic. What about you?
Yeah, Utah is certainly trending downward. They have a hard time winning outside their home state. And it's like you said, I mean, you wonder how the hell Utah beat Stanford, but like we just spent the last, 10 minutes talking about, Stanford has been terrible on offense, and that's really what it came down to in that game. So Utah, yeah, things aren't looking good. It was a nice start, but the last 5 games or so are going to be rough.
There is nothing better for an offense that has been in a little bit of a slide than going up against Cal and having them come to your house. So, cheers to Keith Price and Bishop Sankey for feeling a little bit better on Sunday than they have as the Huskies win 41-17.
Yeah, Cal, they are the medicine of the Pac-12 for the bad teams, because after struggling those weeks, Washington put up like nearly 650 yards of offense. Keith Price had nearly 400 yards passing. Bishop Sankey nearly had 250 yards rushing. It was the salve they needed.
In our what we're seeing, and if you are listening and are around a computer on Saturdays, we have a running blog on CBSSports.com. You can find it from the homepage. It's what we're seeing for, early impressions, and Tom and Jerry Hennon and myself all contribute to it through the day. And our friend Jerry had the Oklahoma-Texas Tech game. He channeled as Marshall Mathers, and he said, "Will the real Blake Bell please stand up?" I'm not going to channel my Eminem, but I was so shocked, and I am so confused at Blake Bell averaging 11.3 yards per attempt, 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, running 9 times for 44 yards, and really just a dominant rushing attack in, by the whole crew of Oklahoma, 277 team rushing yards, averaging 5.5 yards a carry. Texas Tech keeps it interesting, can't pull it together at the end. This was my upset pick, but my number one thing in the upset alert post that we did on Friday, I said the real question is the quarterback. If they turn the ball over, they're not going to be able to do it. And sure enough, you've got 2 interceptions thrown and a fumble lost for Texas Tech, and they do fall short 38-30. Impressed by Oklahoma, or do you think that Texas Tech was exposed after opening up with a soft schedule?
You were shocked by that performance by the Sooners?
Yeah.
Why?
By the offense.
As we've said all year long, this team is bipolar.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's true. I guess I should have read the medical history before opening up this game on Sunday.
You don't know which Blake Bell is going to show up, but it's either going to be the, oh, my God, what is he doing, Blake Bell, or it's going to be the, oh, my God, what is he doing? You know, so I wasn't surprised by this. I think this game was more – I don't know if I would say it was Texas Tech being exposed, but I – because I never really rated Texas Tech as being that great of a team anyway. I thought the team benefiting from a pretty nice start to the schedule to me, but – I think Texas Tech actually played well in this game, considering who they were going against, because this was by far the toughest game that they faced, and winning in Norman isn't easy for anybody. It's not easy for Oklahoma these days either. So I didn't take too much away from it. This is just next week the Sooners will, you know, crap the bed, so to speak. They'll have a terrible game, and they might still win, but it's just who Oklahoma is at this point. It's who Blake Bell is at this point. And for the Red Raiders, you know, I think – like I said, I never really rated that high. I think I believe more in the Texas Tech Red Raiders now than I did before that game, to be honest with you, because now I know they can hang with the better teams in the Big 12, so now I think they have a legit shot in that conference.
Okay. I like that. I can roll with that. That, you know, maybe it wasn't that Texas Tech was overrated, but they just needed that first – this team, which is – markedly different in many, many, many ways from Tommy Tuberville's squad, just needed to play against the big boys.
Yeah, and I think that's what we saw. We saw that this is a team that can compete with in Oklahoma. So when it goes into the rest of its schedule and plays Texas and Baylor and all those guys, I think this is a team that will be there. And I think it just shows how good of a job Cliff Kingsbury has been doing already.
TCU-Texas delay pushes a game right into the wee hours of the morning. What you may have missed is we got Swoops' red shirt burned. We got 30-7 Texas win. Texas is 4-0 in Big 12 play. And Gary Patterson, Horned Frogs head coach after the game, openly admitting, quote, bottom line is we're not very good. TCU, big time disappointment. But from Texas, you know, this is what they needed to do after those two losses, changing defensive coordinator. They have quietly moseyed their way to a 4-0 start in Big 12 play. Looking down the rest of the Texas schedule, you know, what are you seeing for the Longhorns?
I'm seeing a situation where, now, crazier things can happen before them, but I'm seeing a situation where Texas is going to go on the road in November, early December. The last game in the history of Floyd Casey Stadium in Waco, Baylor hosting Texas. I'm seeing that at this point as the odds-on favorite to be the Big 12 de facto championship game.
That would be such an insane atmosphere.
And I mean, when you think just, you know, I think it's natural when you hear that to think, oh, God, Baylor will boat race them. They'll put up like 80 points on that defense. But at the same time, I mean, we could write off Texas in that game now, but we've been writing off Texas since September. So it's who the hell knows what would happen to that game. I wouldn't be shocked if somehow Texas comes out and beats Baylor and ends Baylor's undefeated season. Like, the Bears are ranked number 2 at that point. Everybody else has lost. Baylor's on its way to the national title game. And then, oh, Mac Brown shows up and kills it.
Mac Brown would kill everyone's fantasy. Because that's like, you know,
gets a 10-year extension.
Baylor's the young, hip team of this season. I mean, they're trendy, trendy, trendy. And if they're undefeated – now, you know what? Actually, I might predict that. If they are undefeated going up against Texas, they're probably going to lose.
Mack Brown, he hates the children.
All right, did you before we leave the Big 12, did you know Desmond Rowland, Oklahoma State running back, was that nasty?
No.
Me neither.
No. But before we give him too much credit, let's remember who he was facing.
Yeah, but they haven't – I mean, that's been one thing that I think's been missing from Oklahoma State. They just haven't had a good rushing attack.
And they've really needed it because between Shelf and Wallace, they've struggled quite a bit at the quarterback position. And that's another team who – and we're not talking about – that's another team I think is kind of overrated at this point for what it's done on the field.
We are talking about junior Desmond Rowland, backup running back who might be the starter now.
Yeah. It'd be hard to bench him after that, don't you think?
I mean, heading into the game against West Virginia, 7 carries, 46 yards, 2 carries against Kansas State, 3 carries against TCU, then at Iowa State, 26 carries, 219 yards. That's 8.4 a carry and 4 touchdowns. This is really what has been missing. And Oklahoma State had that sort of, that churn where you had Randall and Smith?
Joseph Randall and, I can't remember.
No, Jeremy Smith is on the team now.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. But anyway, Desmond Rowland now, thanks to this big day, this is how much the Oklahoma State rushing attack has struggled. He puts up 219, and his new season total of 366 launches him to first place on the team in rushing.
Woo!
Yeah, big time. All right, let's depart and let's quickly hit some non-BCS stuff. UCF crushes UConn. We're 62-17. Bortles and Storm Johnson both just a dynamic attack. At the same time, Houston beats Rutgers 49-14 at Rutgers homecoming. Deontay Greenberry really standing out. They're getting a lot of good play from their freshman quarterback, O'Korn, who's already sniffing the 2,000-yard mark on the season, got 19 touchdowns. And Houston's only loss is 47-46 to BYU. Are you ready to take Houston seriously as a threat to both UCF and Louisville here in the American?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think Houston's a team that's played very well. And like you said, they lost last week, but they bounced back really well this week in that game. And, it's a three-horse race in the American. It's the one thing you can always count on the Big East / American Conference for is come November, at the end of October, there's going to be about 5 teams in the running for the conference title. So even if it's mediocre, it's always interesting. And Houston, they still get – the problem they've got – they've got UCF and Louisville in back-to-back weeks on the road.
Yeah.
Now, that's going to be tough. But they've played well enough. And, I mean, it's not like Louisville is a world beater this year. I mean, they've been ranked high all season long before that loss to UCF. But what has Louisville really done that said wow to you? And UCF has played well. But, they crushed UConn this week. But you should crush UConn. UConn's a bad football team. So they're not exactly impervious to losses. So I wouldn't be shocked if Houston did. I'd say out of those three, they're probably in third place right now as far as odds go, but they're not terrible odds.
Teddy Bridgewater, 25 for 29 for 344 and 3 touchdowns. I think it was Mark Ennis from SB Nation who just, he said it's robotic, and that's kind of the way it is. And I feel like Teddy Bridgewater will continue to be relevant because he's so good. But the problem is the margin of error was so thin for Louisville heading into the season, and the ranking was so high, mostly because of that win over Florida in the Sugar Bowl. It's going to be really ridiculous stats for the rest of the season. I just don't think that Louisville, with that one loss, is going to be able to enter into the BCS picture by any door other than winning the American crown.
Oh, no, they have to win the conference. They're not getting back in, no. I mean, they were ranked, 20th in the BCS last week?
Yeah.
After just one loss? They're not getting into the – they're not getting into an at-large spot if they drop to 20th with one loss.
And so they're really hoping for the three-way tie. They need to beat Houston and hope Houston beats Central Florida.
Yeah, it's not entirely in their own destiny, which is never a good position to be in, but they did it to themselves. And also, I'm shocked that Mark Ennis would have said something about Louisville. That's really out of his character.
He was covering the game, Tom.
He was he? Wow.
Tulane 6-2, 4-0 in conference play. Tulane and Duke bowl eligible in the same weekend.
Tulane.
How do you feel about that?
It's late October, and Tulane
and Rice.
Duke, Minnesota, and Buffalo are all bowl eligible, as is the annual college football custom.
Unbelievable. Good for them. First of all, good for them. You know,
hell yes.
Absolutely. You know, it's glad they got everything going. All right. I saved this for last because I really wanted to. Holy crap. Jordan Lynch had led 658 offensive yards. Oh, yeah. Northern Illinois is pretty good.
Yep. I mean, playing in the MAC helps.
Yeah, that's true. We said this in Campfire. Might as well lay it out for the listeners. We're not ignoring Northern Illinois, but Ball State really looks like one of the only teams that's going to stand in their way. Very excited about that game, especially because it's a division game, so a lot will be riding on it. But, you know, he's just padding stats at this point.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Northern Illinois is playing great. They're a very good team. But of the 13 teams in the MAC, seven or six of them have two wins or less.
Yeah.
On the season. Not in conference. I mean on the season. It's a terrible conference this year. And there's no faulting Northern Illinois for beating up on it, but it's not the same team as last year.
Okay. Tom, what's going on in the Big Ten Legends? We got 4-0 Michigan State sitting on top, but obviously a lot. I mean, these last weeks are going to be all conference games. Michigan and Nebraska at 2-1. Nebraska after the loss to Minnesota. Michigan had the week off. Michigan State absolutely pummeled Illinois. Iowa's sitting there at 2-2. Minnesota's at 2-2. But like you mentioned, Minnesota's 6-2 overall. Michigan State 7-1 overall. Michigan 6-1 overall. And Northwestern, the team that had College Game Day, the team that might knock off Ohio State with the world watching, is dead last. Not just in the Legends, worst record in the entire Big Ten, 0-4, 4-4 overall. They have just slid into the basement. Very disappointing for Pat Fitzgerald's squad. Maybe this means Northwestern keeps Pat Fitzgerald. But aside that storyline aside, how do you see the Legends shaking out?
I think you have to assume Michigan State's still the best team in the division, especially after the 42-3 beatdown of Illinois. But there's a huge game this week. I think Michigan State's hosting Michigan in East Lansing this week. I think as far as the Legends concerned, that's a huge game. But then even if Michigan State comes out of that with a win, they've got to go on the road against Nebraska a few weeks later. So it's hard to call it. I would call Michigan State the favorite, but it's certainly not wrapped up by any means. I think the only thing we know is that it won't be Northwestern, and it'll probably somehow end up being Minnesota going to the Rose Bowl.
By Minnesota, so you're saying Minnesota, is that Ohio State goes to the national championship game, Minnesota the Rose Bowl?
No. Minnesota will knock off Ohio State in Indianapolis.
I got you.
It'll be Jerry Kill. Jerry Kill will return to the sideline, and they will ride the emotional wave past Ohio State and on to Pasadena, and many columns will be written about how wonderful it is.
Is it Rashid Hageman or Hagman?
Rashidi Hageman.
Hageman, okay.
Rashid is a monster.
Yeah, whoa. You talked about him in your what we're seeing, and so I went back to try and watch as much of it as I could, and
he was destroying Nebraska's offensive line all day. Just destroying it.
I don't think Taylor Martinez was the problem. That's like a team issue right now in Lincoln.
Yeah, I don't think Taylor Martinez was quite at 100% yet either. But I think had he gotten protection, he would have been just fine. Because in the first drive of the game for Nebraska, in their first scoring drive, they did protect him. And he looked just fine, and the offense looked fine, and they went down the field. And at that point, it looked like Nebraska was going to blow out Minnesota. But then that offensive line started dealing with Hageman, and he just took it over. At first, they were trying to single him, and he was destroying every play in the backfield. Then they started doubling him, which started freeing up the other guys in Minnesota's front seven to get to the quarterback and get pressure on Martinez. And Taylor had about an average of 2.5 seconds at most to, you know, get the throw out if it was there. It was just a long day for that offensive line and for Martinez.
Tisk, tisk, tisk. And Philip Nelson is the bomb.
I love that kid. I was so happy he's back. I think I'm like the Philip Nelson's biggest fan since last year's freshman. I've loved that kid, and nothing against Leidner, but it was just like he's just exciting for me to watch. He's something that, you know, Minnesota deserves.
All right, we are coming down the home stretch. Annual, few people have a good grasp of sort of everything that's going on. Tom, of course, uses his formula to calculate a full 125 ranking. If that is what sets up the best worst, it's the best worst top 10, right? That's the way.
The best worst 10
on CBSSports.com. You can always see that on Sundays, where you know, from his rankings, who are the bottom 10, and of course we use the top 30 for this post on CBSSports.com. What were some of the individual performances as you were sort of scanning the nation that really jumped out to you?
The one that really stood out to me was Garrett Gilbert. Now, keep in mind, SMU is playing Temple, so these numbers are a bit skewed because of that. But Gilbert finished with 538 yards and 4 touchdowns on the day. But more importantly, the 538 yards he had made him the leader, the nation's leader in total offense this season. But what makes that stat even funnier is if you take it on a per-play basis, he may lead the country in total offense, but he's ranked 97th per play. It's just, I don't even know how that's mathematically possible unless SMU is just running 1,000 more plays per game than everybody else is. But still, Garrett Gilbert transferred from Texas. You know, you think of the problems that Texas is somewhat having at quarterback this year, although I think Case McCoy's fine. And there's Garrett Gilbert, old Garrett, leading the nation in total offense, even if it takes him a million plays to get there.
You know what stood out to me about that performance?
The fact that
SMU needed every one of those yards. I mean, this SMU had to come from behind in this game, down 28-14 at halftime. They put up 45 points in the second half. This is a needed Garrett Gilbert performance in order to help SMU avoid giving the Temple Owls their first conference win and second overall.
Well, you know, when the Garrett Gilbert signal goes up, he's there to save the day, Chip.
Thank you, Garrett Gilbert. Anything else that stood out particularly?
We mentioned what's his name from Oklahoma State, Desmond Rowland's 219 yards and 4 touchdowns. That was unexpected. Yeah. And then also, I always give him props, my boy Bishop Sankey with just another ho-hum 241 yards and 2 touchdown performance. Old Bishop just running for 200 yards every week while nobody notices.
Ridiculous. Remember, on Monday, we will have the CBSSports.com Players of the Week, everything leading up to the All-American announcements on December 17th, which will be done in coordination with our friends at CBS Sports Network. We got another big week ahead. Be sure you tune in. You subscribe to the podcast. Tom will be back if it's cool with you, Tom, for the expert picks.
Yeah, you know, we'll see.
All right,
We'll play it by ear.
Tom and Jerry will join you for the expert picks at the end of the week. Make sure you subscribe so that you get them early. For Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.